Hour number three on Chasing Big Joe, 102.5, The Game on this Tuesday. Hope you're having a great day so far. He's Big Joe. I'm Chase McCabe, Dr. Crane, Nick Frazier. On the ones and twos, Mike Tomlin out as the head coach of the Pittsburgh Steelers. So we're following that. What's next for him? But we'll talk a little racing, a little college football now with our buddy Ryan McGee from ESPN, who joins us now. Ryan, how you doing?
I'm good. I'm working on some stuff for game day about Miami. Like I didn't realize this. Three of Miami's five national championships were won at the old Orange Bowl. Like they won the Orange Bowl, and so this is a chance for them to do something kind of old school. But yeah, that's a long way of saying I'm working, but I'm getting ready to go down to the game, which I'm fired up about.
Well, that is going to be really cool. I'm going to be completely honest with you. One of the reasons we're having you on today. I saw your tweet of Ryan Blaney and the caption, which read, "Big thanks to Ryan Blaney for leaving the 1897 spring training game between the Cleveland Spiders and the Boston Beanaters to attend today's NASCAR announcement." I laughed very hard at that. So well done, my friend.
Thank you. No, it was the truth. And, you know, Blaney's got a baby at the house. And you know, anybody that has kids knows you don't really shave the first 6 months, but Roger Penske makes him shave. Like once he officially becomes official, like, all right, I got to go to work in February. Roger Penske likes everybody clean shaven. It's like the Yankees back in the day. So yeah, he's getting as much mustache as he can get in. But yeah, that thing was straight off a Pringles can.
It is fantastic. Hey, Dale Earnhardt would be proud of that mustache. That's on par. For sure. So what do you think about the new old format, essentially going back to the chase that we had starting in 2004? Jimmy Johnson certainly was successful with it, and that's how NASCAR is going to crown their champion moving forward.
Yeah, and Jimmy's the reason, quite honestly, that they changed it, because you know he just kept killing everybody in the old chase format, and so like we have to do something different. And what fans kind of forget now is they wanted something different because they were all tired. I mean, you remember, everybody got sick of Jimmy winning all the time. But I think it's great. I think it's interesting. It's kind of funny that they're going back to the old chase system because, I mean, I'm old enough to remember when everybody complained about that, and now everybody acts like, you know, it's the solution. And I think it is. You know, the problem we saw, and it had always been an issue in the past or close to an issue in the past, but when Denny Hamlin had what might have been the best season of his career last year and dominated the championship weekend, I mean, from the time they unloaded the cars on Friday, he was the fastest car there. And then for a caution flag to cost him everything that he had done throughout the course of 36 races, you know, with basically what, a lap to go, that didn't sit well with anyone, including, you know, the guy who won the championship. You know, I talked to Kyle Larson, I remember, on Monday morning, right after he won the championship on Sunday night, and he goes, "I'm going to see Denny later today. I don't know what to say to him," because everybody agreed. You know, so I think that, you know, and I was in the meeting. Look, so when we first had the first initial like committee meeting back in February at Daytona, I was in the room when Mark Martin just teed off for 10 straight minutes about, I talked to old school race fans that they just want to go back to the old, you know, point system, and I don't think that was the answer. Like one through race through 36. But having some sort of postseason in addition to a 26-race regular season, but getting rid of all the gimmicks, I think that's a pretty good compromise. And Mark Martin said it during the announcement yesterday. You know, hopefully this will bring, you know, some of the old-school fans that it got irritated with the way it is now. The eliminations are gone, and now we just have the old-school chase.
Yeah, and I'm with you. I think it was the perfect compromise, and I feel like NASCAR is in a very interesting place now. Post lawsuit, and sure, there's some hurt feelings on both sides, but I think ultimately they did what needed to be done, and that's figuring out a settlement and how they can move forward. How do you see the sport changing now that that is all behind them?
Well, it just was so tense, you know. If you took last season and just did like the blind taste test, like this is what happened in the 2025 season, I think most people would look at it and go, man, that's pretty good. I mean, you know, we had some unbelievable finishes and had a great championship race and a lot of different winners. And it just, on paper, it was a great year. No one's going to remember it like that, because when you went to the racetrack, particularly the second half of the season, it just got super, super tense. And the reason was because everyone knew the lawsuit was coming. And I think that most people thought that it would be settled by the time we got to the – but it overshadowed the championship. And the conversation wasn't Denny Hamlin could finally win a championship. The conversation was, man, what if Denny Hamlin wins a championship while he's suing NASCAR? And so I just think everybody's relieved that's over. And everybody's kind of mad that it even got to trial, because if it doesn't get to trial, then the texts don't get out. And, you know, Richard Childress isn't embarrassed, and now he's not mad. It just got so contentious that I think there's a lot of relief that it's over. And you saw that during the announcement. And then on top of all that, Greg Biffle dies, right?
Right.
And so I think you saw yesterday the look on everyone's face was, man, you know, we're finally doing what Jim France talked about when they walked out of the courthouse, you know, a month ago, which is let's start talking about racing again. And I'm hoping that by the time we get to Daytona here in just a few weeks, then we'll just be talking about racing and you know, get through media day and then get on with racing.
There certainly, you know, is discussion, and I'm with you. I'm surprised that it ever got to trial and it didn't need to. But something needed to happen, in my opinion. Like, nothing against the France family. The France family is the reason there is NASCAR and have done so much for the sport. But, you know, I agree. The teams deserved more of the pie. The drivers deserve, you know, more decision-making. So it was kind of a necessary evil to hopefully – send the sport in a better place. It's just now, how do they all work together to do that?
Yeah, and I hate that Steve Phelps got sacrificed in this.
Me too, because Steve's a good guy.
He's a great guy, and the reality is that if Steve had had his way, I wrote this in the column, you know, that I wrote about, you know, what we learned the day that the trial ended, which was, you know, Steve Phelps had his way, this would all been done a long time ago. But the reality is he couldn't do but so much because Jim France wouldn't let him do it. And so, you know, but that being said, those texts were terrible and mm-hmm. it was a bad idea. And, you know, we'll never know the context of it. Was that at 2 o'clock in the morning with a bottle of wine? I have no idea, but it was ill-advised. And what I hate is that Steve is the guy who got rid of the Confederate flag. Steve is the guy that brought NASCAR back more before any other major league sport during COVID. And Steve is the guy that modernized NASCAR and pushed it into the future. And now, you know, he's going to be remembered for those texts. And that's, you know, he shouldn't have done it, but I hate that that's where it was left. But I'm with you. I think that, you know, the good that came out of it is that, yes, I believe that. I didn't understand why the charters weren't permanent, you know, and now they are. And I agree. I've told the story many times, but back in the 90s, man, when I was first doing this, the saddest thing I've ever seen that wasn't, you know, like a physical death, you know, injury on the racetrack was watching Ricky Rudd and Bill Elliott and Jeff Bodine and Bobby Allison and Cale Yarborough and all these guys, you know, auction off their lives for pennies on the dollar because what they had built wasn't worth anything. And that's what the charters are. And so I have always supported that, and I supported the fact that I thought this should be permanent. But, you know, it had to get ugly to get there, but now we're there, and hopefully the sport's better off for it.
Ryan McGee is on the Chase and Big Joe Show. Ryan, what years were you at Tennessee?
I was there for the Johnny Majors coup d'etat. I was there about my senior year was 93. I was at the Vanderbilt game Thanksgiving weekend. I saw Heath Shuler. I hadn't seen Heath in forever, but that was my quarterback. And so it was good to see all those guys. But yeah, Heath and I were laughing about, you know, we start talking about the 90s and people act like we're talking about, you know, when we play with Bronco Nagurski.
You know, what's funny is that like all my friends went there in the late 80s, early 90s. And I tell people they don't understand me, Ryan. I'm like, if I had a quarterback, one quarterback in college to take, give me Andy Kelly all day long. And they look at me like I'm crazy. And I loved Andy Kelly.
Yeah, no, AK was my guy. In fact, my senior year, I worked for the football team. I worked on the video crew. I worked with Barry Rice and Lincoln, those guys.
Oh, yeah.
And so we had a football crew intramural team. And it was the equipment guys and the you know, the trainers and us. And we walked out on the field my senior year, and Andy Kelly was our quarterback because AK was playing arena football.
Right.
And he was a grad assistant. And so, when we walked out on the field, you know, and the Sigma Chi's thought they were going to whip us, and we had the Cotton Bowl MVP with us. I think they realized they probably didn't stand a chance. But yeah, no, Andy, I will say this, I also like my chances if I'm throwing it to Alvin Harper and Carl Pickens.
Oh, all day long.
But AK was the man, and people, I tell Shuler this all the time. Shuler, he to me is the perfect example of what I call a pre-internet guy. If Heath Shuler played now, like with the internet, he would break the internet.
Oh.
But people don't remember him like I think they should. Same with Carl Pickens. They don't remember him like they think they should because they played right before the internet became a thing.
Give me the Heath Shuler game at Georgia 92 all day long.
Oh, it was that game changed my chemistry, man. And it was so when I was in school, Tennessee was in an 8-year losing streak to Alabama, but we started that decade plus streak against Georgia, and that was back in the days where I think Vandy and Kentucky neither one had beaten Tennessee since the early '80s. So it was a good time. And Coach Majors was my guy. When Coach passed away a couple of years ago, I wrote a column about the fact that I was really lucky because I worked for the football team for 2 years and I was on the offensive tower every day shooting practice.
Oh, man.
And that was Coach Major's tower. And so every day, man, Coach Major's, Ryan, how'd you do on your history test? Are you still dating that girl from Gallatin? Like every single – what game's your dad reffing this weekend? I mean, Coach Major's was my coach, man, and I miss him.
Yeah, he was great. I did a Jack Daniels barbecue tasting. Ryan, it was me, him, and Guy Fieri at the same table.
Are you kidding me?
And Johnny was fascinated by Guy Fieri's hair, and he kept asking me, what the hell do you think he put in his hair? And I'm bald, and I'm like, Coach, I don't know. He's like, I probably shouldn't be asking you. I'm like, yeah, you probably shouldn't. But he was fascinated by Guy Fieri.
The least surprising part of that sentence was that it was a Jack Daniels event and Coach showed up.
Right? To do all that. I want to ask you, though, you mentioned earlier when you came on talking to Chase about the Orange Bowl. Like, are you doing there's a great Facebook page called Ghosts of the Orange Bowl. It's all these great pictures and videos from the Orange Bowl from the 50s up to the time the Dolphins left in 86. I'm fascinated by that stadium, and I'm curious, what story are you doing about that?
Well, it's kind of what you're talking about, which is kind of educating people on, and again, I knew that Miami had won Orange Bowls in that stadium, but I didn't realize 3 of their 5 national championships were clinched at home. But I was there on a night. It's funny. So you guys know this. My dad was a college football referee forever, and he worked the 1990 Orange Bowl, and Colorado was number 1, and Notre Dame beat Colorado in the Orange Bowl. And the craziest thing about that night was that the stadium was packed with all these Miami Hurricanes fans. And all of a sudden, randomly during the game, these cheers would go up in the stands. And it was all the Miami fans who were listening to the Sugar Bowl. Because Miami was playing Alabama in the Sugar Bowl.
Yeah.
So they were there to root for Notre Dame because they needed Notre Dame to beat Colorado, who was number 1. And then, meanwhile, Miami was beating Alabama in New Orleans. But the Orange Bowl was amazing. But, man, it wasn't fancy. Like, it was kind of a dump. I remember we went out on the field the morning of the game with Dad, and it was really just dirt that was spray-painted green. There wasn't a lot of actual turf on the field because they played high school championships there, and there was a soccer team there and all that stuff. But it's kind of like Shea Stadium. All Mets fans say, it's a dump, but it's our dump. And there's a lot of Miami fans that still wish they played in that stadium. But now that's where the Marlins ballpark is. It sits right on top of the site there in Little Havana where the Orange Bowl was.
Yeah, it's crazy. You drive by there thinking, what in the world? How was that? And you look at it and you stare at it.
Yeah.
Same spot. So you're right, same spot.
Yep. But that's I'm real fortunate. I get to write these essays for College Game Day every week, and a lot of times they let me lean into my history nerd aspect of my life, and so that's what I'm writing about is that the magic of that. And so if this is going to be a true old school Miami national championship, it would make a lot of sense if they won it, not at the old Orange Bowl, obviously, but if they clinched it at home.
Who wins it in your opinion?
Well, I said all that, and now I'm just going to tell you Indiana's probably going to win. but it's interesting that there's a home aspect to that as well, because, you know, for folks that don't know, I mean, Fernando Mendoza grew up going to Miami games, you know, at, you know, what I still call Joe Robbie Stadium, Hard Rock Stadium. His dad played high school football there at Miami Columbus with Mario Cristobal.
Wow.
They were high school teammates. Yeah, and so, and it's going to be interesting because – the crowd will be a home crowd for Miami, but it will also be a home crowd for Mendoza, who grew up 30 minutes south of the stadium. So I just – and listen, until – it's the Ric Flair line, right? You know, to be the man, you got to beat the man. And right now, Indiana's just – I mean, it's been a while since we've seen a team go through a postseason like this. And it's a great story. It's still, honestly, it's like Diego Pavia, right? It's hard for me to wrap my brain around – the number one team in the country and the Heisman winner being at Indiana, because our whole lives, everyone's whole lives, Indiana's been terrible at football. The losingest team in the history of college football until this year. And then the only reason that they're not still on the list because they haven't lost a game this year. So it's hard to wrap your brain around it, but, man, it sure is fun to watch.
It's going to be a fun one for sure. And then we're, what, about 6 weeks or a little bit less away from Daytona. So it's almost here.
I booked my Daytona travel right before you guys called. So it's I'll be going back. And, yeah, there's a – you know, don't tell anybody, but I'm going to go to the national championship game in a few weeks later. I'm going to go to Daytona, and they pay me in American dollars to do it. But don't tell anybody.
I know.
I don't want that secret to get out.
It's a good gig. Well, there's a good chance we'll see you in Daytona, so I look forward to catching up.
Yep, I look forward to it. I'll be there.
All right. Thanks, Ryan. Appreciate it.
Thanks, guys.
Ryan McGee, ESPN, also Marty and McGee on ESPN Radio and the SEC Network. Always enjoy our conversations with him. We'll come back with more. Chasing Big Joe, 102.5 The Game. Chasing Big Joe, 102.5 The Game, here on this Tuesday. Appreciate Ryan McGee for joining us. You got him excited about Andy Kelly.
Look, this is why this show works, right? Like, you are a little bit of the old, but all the new.
Yeah.
Dr. Crane's all the new. I'm just the old man in the room who's like the old, right? And so all those things.
I consider myself like between you two, I'm in the middle.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you got one foot in this portal, one foot in that portal. But I mean, Andy Kelly was an amazing quarterback at Tennessee, but he also had Pickens and Alvin Harper and Terrence Cleveland and T.D. Woods from Gallatin. I mean, those are some iconic guys he had there. So,
you know how
we all just kind of revolve around these different time periods.
When I was a kid, like, I vaguely remember Heath Shuler, like, vaguely. It was pretty much Peyton for me.
Yeah.
But I remember Andy Kelly with the Cats. I remember Andy Kelly doing sideline for the Vol Network. I mean, I knew who he was, and obviously.
So, Mike, quarterback to Tennessee, you know, it was, you know, Alan Cockrell, and then you had Tony Robinson, and then Daryl Dickey, and then you had Andy Kelly and Sterling Hinton and all these guys. And yours was, you know, the Iceman, Casey Clawson, was great. Great. Probably the most underrated SEC quarterback of all time. Nobody talks about him, and he was great.
I could probably – let's see. So, it was Peyton – T. Martin, Casey Clawson,
Bonehead, Eric Ainge,
Rick Clawson. I feel like there's one in there that
Jonathan is it Crompton?
Yeah, well,
yeah,
but I feel like there was even one before that. Crompton,
not really, because Ainge
Sims
took it. Yep,
Matt Sims. Who was the one that? Who'd Kiffin have?
Crompton.
Crompton.
2009.
But who was the one he was recruiting, who he was with the Chiefs for as a backup?
Tyler Bray.
Yep. So him.
And then he had the quarterback at Clemson was going to come here, and Cliff Kiffin didn't like him. What's his name? Taj Boyd,
yeah.
So there's been all these runs, but Tennessee's had some quarterbacks that haven't set the world on fire, but it all kind of defaults back to Peyton. But, man, Andy Kelly, Heath Shuler. And Ryan McGee's right, man. Heath Shuler was something – he was the running quarterback. I mean, he was something to behold. Nobody could stop him.
He was fun.
So good. So good. And the kind of years ahead of his time. And then got drafted by the Redskins, held out, wasn't very good, goes to the Saints with Ditka, has a hurt foot, and then was never the same after that.
51 minutes ago, Diana Russini posted, as John Harbaugh continues to gather information about his next landing spot, I'm told the Giants, the Falcons, and the Titans are considered the favorites to land the former Ravens head coach at this time.
We could have said the same thing. We did say the same thing. We have said the same thing in here. It's those – look, you want to go where you can win. John Harbaugh's not going to do a rebuild. He's not. Unless it's the Giants because it's New York.
Yeah.
That's it. And you – the Falcons defense is
okay,
there.
But let me ask you this. Again, this goes back to every coach has an ego. You got $100 million in cap space or more. You look at what the Patriots, when I've been saying this, I've forgotten one big one, the Texans. I mean, the Texans weren't in the playoffs last year. You look at some of these teams, the Bears, that have the young quarterback that they build around through the draft and then supplement with free agency, and all of a sudden they're back in the playoffs. I mean, if you are John Harbaugh, you look at that, and yes, the Giants are certainly in this conversation, as are the Falcons. But you look at $100 million in cap space and go, yeah, we could probably turn this around a lot quicker than people think we could. Whether that's true or not, they're going to think that.
That's fine, but you've already got proven guys in Atlanta. I'm trying to think, who made the playoffs in the AFC South last year? If it wasn't the Texans, who made it? Wasn't the Jags.
Who did win it last year? Colts? No. Well, now I don't remember.
Right.
Maybe it was the Texans?
I'm looking at their schedule from last year, week 18.
Yeah, it was the Texans.
Was it?
10-7 record.
So did they miss the year before?
I guess so.
Who beat them in the playoffs last year? For the Chargers beat them last year.
That's right. Okay, so it was the Texans.
Okay, all right.
So did they win back-to-back?
They must have, yeah.
Okay, so it was a few years ago.
I mean,
So have they not missed? So Stroud's made the playoffs every year.
Yes.
Okay.
So right? Yeah. Yes. I just think you've got proven guys in Atlanta. Now you go out there and you have $100 million. That's great, but can you find the right fit here? And if you want to win, there you go, man. And you know Arthur Blank's probably going to give you control of that team. I think it's. The Giants are intriguing because it's the Giants, right? You're back in that market in New York City. You could turn around this fame franchise. I would be floored he comes to Tennessee. Floored.
We'll see. Here's a funny thing for you. Since the AFC South was formed, which was in 2002, The first champion was?
In 2002 had to be the Titans.
It was the Titans.
Yeah.
What team has won the most division titles since that time?
Colts.
They have won 9. They have not won it since 2014, though.
Wow.
You know what team is second?
The Jags.
The Texans.
Oh.
The Colts have won it 9 times. The Texans have won it 8 times. The Titans have won it 4, and the Jags have won it 3.
Wow. 24 seasons. That's crazy. The Jags, their third was this year.
Correct. Their first one was 2017.
That's the year with Blake Bortles. They went all the way to the AFC Championship game.
And then 22, and then this year. The Titans last won it in 20, and then 21. So the Titans are the last back-to-back. Oh, no, I'm sorry. Houston did. But, yeah.
Shows you how I can flip on a dime. But, again, with her saying Harbaugh, and he probably is. That's fine. But of all those, Tennessee's going to be the longest rebuild you've got out there.
I mean, didn't people say that about New England?
There were some guys already in place, man. And
okay, who are the guys here? Think about this during the break. We'll come back and we'll talk about this. Because who brought that up earlier? Doug. Doug brought that
Doug.
Up earlier. We'll talk about that next. Jeremy, hang on. I'll get your call as well. Chasing Big Joe, 102.5 The Game. It was 9 o'clock in Boise, Idaho.
All day.
Chasing Big Joe, 102.5 The Game on this Tuesday. All right, before we get to that Titans question, Jeremy has a NASCAR comment. Jeremy, what's up?
Hey, how's it going today?
Good, man.
I just wanted to weigh in, and now I could be misinformed, but when we were talking about the France family and what they've done, of course they've done a lot of stuff for NASCAR, but correct me if I'm wrong. Didn't they put the death nail in the Nashville Super Speedway out in Lebanon saying there will never be a cup race there? and that pretty much signed the death warrant on that, to just leading them to having just the IndyCar races, the Craftsman Truck, and the minor league races rather than anything that was going to be on the echelon of the Cup races. And that pretty much kind of put the kibosh on everything. And then to add insult to injury, isn't the road next to the Super Speedway called Bill France Boulevard or Bill France Drive or something like that?
It is. Well, you know, the Speedway now hosts a race and has the last 5 years. But, they ran NASCAR, and that was Brian France at that time. I think there was a lot of rumor on that, and then there was a little bit of a contest between the Frances and Bruton Smith. That obviously before he bought the Speedway, but there's some truth to that, but it's changed, and you got different Frances running it now. And obviously they love being in Nashville. They've brought the award show here several times, and then, like I said, they've had successful sellout races the last 5 years.
Dig it. Just wanted some clarification on that. I appreciate that. I love what y'all do. Y'all are amazing.
Yep. Thanks, Jeremy. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
So that was a while ago.
That would be you on the NASCAR part. Look, and I think it's when they're like at this National Super Speedway, there were these like a drag strip track that was going to be out there, and
they were going to do it when Dover owned it. And the rumor, I don't know how much truth there was to all this. The rumor was that in the late 90s and the early 2000s, you know, NASCAR was trying to move to different markets,
right?
And it was basically like, you build it, we'll come. So the problem was, you had Chicagoland build a mile and a half, Kansas built a mile and a half, Kentucky built a mile and a half, and Nashville built basically a mile and a half, mile and a third. And so you had all these tracks that were the same. So they go to Chicago, they go to Kansas. Chicago made sense because it's Chicago.
True.
Kansas was a bit of a stretch, but they wanted to go to the Midwest, so they did. And then you had Kentucky and Nashville that, you know, weren't that far apart, and they ended up getting bushed in truck races and stuff, but no Cup. And then they got to the schedule where they had 36 points paying races, and Bill Jr., Bill France Jr., and everybody was like, look, we're done. And the drivers are like, no more. I mean, there's too much on this schedule. So then it became if you want a race – like if you're Dover had two races. Well, if you want to go to Nashville, you got to give up one in Dover. Well, they were selling both those races out. Why would they do that?
Sure.
I forgot who owned Kentucky at the time. It was before Bruton bought it. But, you know, then Speedway Motorsports buys it, and it's kind of the same thing. And there was a lawsuit because the difference there was they had been promised a race. Like, it was actually in writing that they were promised a race. And so they sued and they got it, and then they squandered it with the first one because they didn't have the traffic figured out, and it just, they never recovered from that. Dover starts going through not selling out, not getting the crowds they did, you know, and that's when the whole fairgrounds thing picked up, because NASCAR was like, we need to be back in Nashville. Like, it makes so much sense to be back in Nashville.
Right.
And they were looking at that, and Dover was like, well, why don't we move one of our races to Nashville? We'll reopen that track. You guys are there. And they've sold out, I think, all but one.
Oh, it's great. Now, is Kentucky gone?
It's closed. They're not racing there. Just sitting there now.
So they built a track.
And Chicago, like, here's the funny thing. Chicago was sitting there. They're going back this year because they did the street course race, and they're not going to do that. So they're going back this year. It was just sitting there. I like that track. I mean, it's just, we got to this cookie cutter mile and a half. You know, Nashville has a little character because it's not quite a mile and a half.
Right.
So it races similar to like a Phoenix. And so it's above a mile, but it kind of races like a short track a little bit. You know, Kentucky was very similar to, and they reconfigured it a couple times. Like, it was kind of similar to a Charlotte or Atlanta or Texas, something like that. And it just, in the 90s, they were like, oh, we can't do short tracks. Got to build these big super speedways. And it's like, man, just character. Like, there's one out in Iowa that is a very, very nice track that's a short track that I love, and I'm glad they're racing at it now.
Don't they do IndyCar at that track too?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So
you know, the drivers that I get to talk to because of you, I mean, it's always goes back to Bristol.
Mm-hmm.
They hate Bristol, but they love Bristol, right? I mean, that's like the love-hate like that because you're not racing Bristol every week.
Yeah.
You're not racing that kind of track.
But see, here's the thing with Bristol. They have two races there. One does really well, one not so much. You know what the biggest difference is? One's at night, one's in the day. There's something about that place at night that's right. just different.
Well.
And, you know, so but that's kind of the thing on that. Who would you keep from this Titans team?
Oh gosh, I was going to pull the list up, but I need to see who's.
We need to spend time on this tomorrow.
Well, yeah, that's a good topic tomorrow to see who's going to come because the coach is going to come in and reevaluate everything. Like, all right, whose contract's expiring? Whose contract is close to expiring that we can get out of? And that offers a whole new dynamic. But again, I just think whoever this coach is, and you got to build around your quarter. I mean, every successful thing is building around your quarterback. You got to build a line around him. Yep. But you can't take a lineman in the first round anymore. You can't do that. Latham and Skoronski have to hit. They have to hit. There's no other excuse. They got to make it happen with them. If you get a good left tackle in there and build, you can go, man. All these teams left, these eight teams left, all have outstanding offensive lines. Not a secret, yep. man. They all have great lines.
You protect the quarterback and you get him a couple weapons. I mean, that's how it works. So we will see. I have a feeling more news will happen in the coaching world before tomorrow. And it just seems to be that time of year. Coming up next, we'll tell you what day it is and celebrity birthdays. It's Chase and Big Joe on this Tuesday, 102.5 The Game. Chase and Big Joe, 102.5 The Game on this Tuesday. Looking forward to DVD coming up next here on 102.5 The Game. As they're at Bridgestone Arena, Predators and Oilers tonight as they continue this homestand. Actually going to wrap it up tonight and then a couple of games on the road. Friday night at Colorado and then Saturday night in Vegas and then back at Bridgestone Arena next week.
Three games. It works. You turn the microphone on.
Yeah, that's generally a good thing. Yeah, so here's the important thing about tonight. We get a couple days off in between games, which they don't get a lot of with the schedule and the way it is right now. So that is obviously is good. And then, Buffalo next Tuesday, then Ottawa and Utah on Thursday and Saturday before back on the road for a little East Coast trip that ends January.
Thank you there.
Yeah, you're welcome.
I'm on Google Calendar.
With that, let's get to what day is it and celebrity birthdays. Sorry, people like to text me during the show.
Okay, first on the list we have Public Radio Broadcasting Day, so that's always great. That's us. Stephen Foster Memorial Day, so American songwriter. National Rubber Ducky Day, make sure you get those in the bath. National Shop for Travel Day, good for that. There we go. National Sticker Day, Printing Ink Day. National Poetry at Work Day. Joe likes a little poetry.
I do. I like a little poetry.
Make your dream.
Like potpourri, too.
I do.
Oh.
I like eating potpourri.
What is that?
Eating potpourri. You just smell better.
Oh, okay. Sounds delicious.
Thank you.
Making your dream come true day. Korean American Day. And to wrap it up, National Peach Melba Day.
Peach Melba?
Yeah.
What is that?
It's like an ice cream.
Where's the Melba? Okay.
I don't know.
It's family show, man.
I don't know how to answer that one.
Melba, man.
Is it a hand gesture? I don't know.
Whoa.
Melba? I don't know.
I don't know. Is David James back there? I can't see him.
Yes, he is.
All right, David, get ready to answer the phone. Caller number 4 at 615-737-1025. That's why this is a popular segment. You're going to win a pair of tickets to tonight's game to see Edmonton and Nashville. And you'll also win a Dierks Bentley bobblehead, which that night is tonight. First 10,000 fans will get that Dierks Bentley bobblehead, but you can win one right now. 615-737-1025. Now birthdays.
All right, time for celebrity birthdays. Get these within two. Dr. Crane, Chase went first yesterday. You get to go first today. How old is Kentucky Derby trainer, horse owner, all-around good guy Bob Baffert?
73.
74.
73 exactly. How you answered that way too quickly.
I know who that is.
Yeah, but you answered it way. Did you talk to him today? No, it's his birthday?
He Maybe. Called him.
All right.
Hey, Bob, what's up?
I like horse racing.
You're like, hey, Bab.
Because people have told me I could be one of those jockeys.
By the way, you could. So I said, by the way, thanks to the Predators for having us last night at their bowling event, you could definitely be a jockey. But I said to him last night, I could totally see Dr. Crane in a bowling league. Like, you would have the wrist strap things and, like, the custom ball.
My uncle that lives in Fairview is in a bowling league somewhere in Dixon.
I could totally see, because, you know, we say this with love and joke that you are the youngest 73-year-old we've ever met. I could totally see you being in a bowling league.
Well, I hate to rain on the parade. I despise wasting my time. So
okay,
that's something I just
Bowling's don't like. A waste of time, you think?
A little bit for me.
I think it's fun. I'm not good at it, but I think it's fun.
It's fun. I'd rather spend 2 hours of my life doing something else.
But Chase is right. You're the type of guy that walks in, you talk to everybody. Hey, how's it going? You know, how you doing today?
And then bowls like 280.
Yeah, right?
I mean, look, natural athletes are natural athletes. You can't help it.
Yeah, no, you can't. All right, next up is Chase, you go next. Golfer Mark O'Meara. How old is Mark O'Meara?
You always name these golfers I don't know. 68.
69.
Oh, wow. There we go. Nice.
Chase, you're 2-1. Dr. Crane, hockey player. He played with Stamkos, I think. Nikolai Kubabablin? Kubublin? Nikolai Kubublin?
Habibulin.
What is it?
Habibulin.
How the hell do you – there's not – it's a K. Habibulin?
Yeah.
That's what it is.
I think if that's who I think you're thinking of.
It's K-H-A-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-
46.
53.
Nice. Chase. Nikolai Habibulin.
Habibulin.
That's how you say it.
How old is, he's in town tonight, Connor McDavid?
Twenty-eight.
That's a push.
Dang.
Chaser, how old is, I mean, sorry, Dr. Crane, you go now. Julia Louis-Dreyfus, the most awarded female actress ever.
63. Double check McDavid, please.
Why?
I think it's 29.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
My list got.
Well, we were chatting about it earlier on Jake's show. He was like, make sure you say 29.
Mm. Well, that's collusion.
That is collusion.
And he is 29.
It's public radio.
He is 29. Well, doesn't count. We're throwing it out.
Okay.
You
it was
just,
a push anyways.
No, it wasn't. You got it dead on.
Yeah,
you know what? Give it to him. I'm fine.
No, we're not doing that. No, you said 28. No, would you say 29?
I said 29.
He said 29.
All right, we'll give it to you.
Give it to him. Hair Metal Henry says, Dr. Crane hates wasting his time, and yet he sits there for 3 hours every day.
Something has to keep the lights on, man.
Now you got me questioning my list here. Make sure it's all accurate. We'll find out about Julia Louis-Dreyfus. Hold on.
I haven't said it.
Okay. This is accurate.
So what'd you say?
63.
62. 65. Dr. Crane's up 5-1, but there's an asterisk because he cheated. Dr. Crane, how old is, I once called him the Yao Ming of seeing, Trace Atkins? All 7'9" of him.
63.
67.
64. Dr. Crane's up 6-1 with an asterisk. Chaser, guy that you love, I mean, a lot. Patrick Dempsey, the actor.
Oh. Is that McDreamy?
That is.
Yeah. 59.
57.
60. It's now 6-2. Dr. Crane, Nicole Eggert. Wasn't she on Baywatch or Charles in Charge or one of those shows?
56.
Really attractive blonde-haired lady?
57.
54. So Dr. Crane's up 7-2. Chaser, actor Michael Pena.
I just watched a show with him.
Which one?
All Her Fault. It's on Peacock. It was really good.
That's right. He's in that. He's also in The Martian and a few other things.
Yeah. 53.
57. 50. Dr. Crane, Orlando Bloom, the actor.
40.
Orlando from the Pirates of the Caribbean?
Yes.
Yeah. 48.
49. So you're in striking distance. We'll finish this up real quick. Actor Keith Coogan was in Adventures in Babysitting.
Am I up?
You're up, Chaser.
64.
60.
56. Final one, Dr. Crane. GMA meteorologist Gene Ginger Z.
53.
43.
45, but not enough. Dr. Crane wins 7-4 with an asterisk.
That is going to do it for us today.
As we leave every show, for our guys out there, we tell you all the time how much we love. If you are struggling, please reach out. Please talk to somebody. Talking to somebody saved my life. But listen, we're going to tell you every day how beautiful that you are, how wonderful that you are. And then when people think about you, people laugh, they smile, they love to see you. Please know that. When you tell me nobody's that way, yes, everybody's that way. You are so loved. People like to talk to you, hang out with you. Please know that. Know your journey sometimes rough and difficult, but it's a beautiful journey. It's your journey, and we're here for you. We love you, and more importantly, more than anything else on this world, God loves you.
Amen to that. Peace, love, rock and roll, DVD coming your way next. Barry Trotz will join the show at 5 o'clock. We're back at it tomorrow at noon on 102.5 The Game.